But teach those kids good facts. They were good students before they learned a lot. It was a high-powered class. The problem was not leaving some of the other students in the dust. You know, I had a real struggle to keep to go fast enough to challenge those who had it memorized, and yet not bore them. And not go to get them. If I went too slow, I'd bore them. So to do the job, but those kids really did that. And then they were really a leg up. I guess. Now, why use that method? Somebody tell me. Think about it. Why use the catechetical method?
It'd be what you were talking about the other day, where you're trying to, the person is born with the knowledge, you're trying to draw it out.
Well, they're trying to draw it out, but that's not the basic reason. That's So what they do is, you teach them the question, teach them the answer, they can't read it, they memorize it.
So you go, and the Presbyterian Church, the Protestants, have done this for years, go in and catechize the children. The preacher, for instance, I'll stick you in your head again, or the Calvinistic tradition in Scotland, with the Presbyterian preachers, Hamlet's for this tradition. But once a year, at least once a year, the preacher will go around, the pastor will go around to every home in the church and catechize the children. That is, ask them the questions, which was the belief of Catholic. Okay. Ask them the questions, make sure they get the answer.
Well, sure means nothing, doesn't it? And it was very effective. Okay. This brings us to the Peasants' Revolt. We'll take our break and in 10 minutes we'll come back and talk about the boon shoe. What I have tried to teach you, that one of the reasons Luther, you don't mind me making coffee.
Yeah.
It's my first great hour to teach. I'm getting tired. And I really don't care what you think.
Can we bring our coffee in here?
No.
Brains.
It's called privilege of brain. My father would be in trouble doing it myself. You all tell me now, please.
You can't take your phone on that.
Our carny on the honeymoon. Jack and Mason will go, all right. Are we ready? I've already. Somehow I got a feeling this class isn't going to amount to much. I am all over the head. Make this look natural. It is going to be natural. It's work. I have already taught you, have I not?
Yes.
One of Luther's primary concerns was not simply the theology of the indulgences and all that stuff, but it was the way that it was being used to loot the people. Why? Because, remember, in his treatise to the, in his, when he said, at the Diet of Forms, he said, I cannot recant this. Why? I would leave the people helpless. This underscores the condition of the peasants. They were in terrible condition. Now, a boon shoe, it means bound shoe. You ever seen pictures of a peasant shoe where they really couldn't afford leather and some kind of sole, and they would... They had some kind of sole, and then they would just use rags to tie it on and wrapped up the leg. Poor person shoe. And it was bound around this word shoe, of course, you know German is English is a dramatic language. The word shoe, S-C-H-U-H, shoe is our word shoe, bound or owned, the bound shoe. Meaning a peasant. A bound shoe, a boon shoe is a peasant. That's what he wore. Okay. And remember I said that society teetered on the edge of chaos and these
And so, this peasants' revolt, we're going to see, ruined the dreams, of, as I say, of the German nobility and of Luther, the unified national evangelical church. Why? Well, we'll see. Munch, remember him? He wanted to tear down the idols and break out the stained glass windows and dismantle the monasteries. Munch led this. He was the radical. But Luther was blamed. You see, the enemies of Luther, the Roman Catholic authorities, the princes in Germany who stayed faithful to the Roman Catholic position, they said, here's what they said, and I have it, to Frederick the Wise. When Frederick the Wise Luther revolted against the church, Frederick was delighted because, you see, that meant if they could have a German state church, a state church there in Saxony, the money would not go to Rome, he would have his influence away from there. And the other princes and the men of the church, the churchmen, the bishops and everybody, said to Frederick the Wise, you think it's great that Luther revolts against the church, pretty soon they'd be revolting against you. And so when this peasants' revolt broke out, they began going on a rampage and burn and loot. They keep in mind that when Luther wrote the treatise to the nobility of the common man, the freedom of the Christian man. And contents of these other treatises, he pointed out that the common man was as good as a monk if he served God. Well, this made him very popular. And he took the peasants' side initially, he exhorted the peasants to quit, to straighten up. But he blamed the nobility because they lived in splendor and pride, while the peasants were in hopeless misery. Then he wrote Luther really climbed the frame of the nobility, and they deserved it. Then he wrote a more kind, gentle letter to the peasants, exhorting them to suffer. To be submissive and suffer what they have to suffer. Let God take care of it. Can't have anarchy. Well, but it didn't work. The revolt deteriorated. The peasants were guilty of cruel excesses. They would burn people alive, burn a lot of property. In 1525, several princes who had sided with Luther began to talk about withdrawing from him. Returned to the old system. Why? We can't have our peasants revolting. And when Luther saw, when Luther saw that many of the German nobility were going to turn against the movement and go back to Rome, he turned on the peasants. He said, look, he turned on the peasants. Look what your peasants are calling. You're going to destroy everything. So he turned on them and he called for the nobility to kill them like dogs. Why? They had their chance to repent. Same idea that we were the Jews. Give them some very kindly, loving, give them a chance to repent. But they didn't. Smash them. And so, with Luther on their side, the nobility cruelly oppressed, cruelly put down the revolt, 20,000 were destroyed in one place. 100,000 executed in all of Germany. I think that 100, Germany was not that heavily populated. All of Germany, 100,000 peasants were executed. Many had their eyes put out. Serfdom survived in Germany longer than any other European country except Russia. Germany was behind. The Hitler was trying to catch up. And Luther lost his hold on he lost the heart of the common people. And the religious reform passed into other hands. That is, we're going to see that the Great Reformation that went this to me. Partly because of this, largely because of this, the Great Reformation that was to sweep England and the Netherlands and go into the New World would not be Lutheran. See, Lutheranism, we're going to see that the colonies were a reformed tradition. The American being started as a reformed tradition. Not the Lutheran. Lutheranism was here by immigration, simple immigration. What was the effect of the peasants' revolt on the princes? Many returned to the Roman Church. They were afraid of that. They were warned. Second, on the humanists, such as in France and Erasmus, many of the scholars backed off. Erasmus, who had been sort of waffling between the two, came down the side of the Roman Catholic Church. Why? Because you can't have anarchy. On the peasants, it was spiritual disaster. They had called for divine justice, and look what had happened to them. Their faith in the new gospel, and Luther was shattered. They became indifferent to theology. There was a popular move to materialism and atheism. And start this, we're going to see there between this and this other thing, and especially the 30 Years' War, which we're going to study later. Why is it that Germany became the fountainhead of modern collectivism and state atheism? Marx was a German who lived in London and wrote it. Where did religious liberalism begin? Schleiermacher, where? Germany, I'll meet him later. German radical. You take a higher critical, a radically critical idea, turn it over from the bottom, and says made in Germany. What city, what university is the source of neo-orthodoxies coming into Ireland? To me. Why is not? And which country started two wars in our century? Germany. Why? Where did Western civilization lose its soul first? Germany. Why? It goes back to this. So much more was added, but it goes back to this. The common people said, well, so much for the church and so much for God. Because in the name of God, both Catholics and Protestants, both the Catholic princes, in the name of God, both the Catholic princes and Lutheran princes, those who followed him, executed 100,000 in one place. I'm sorry, 100,000 for all of Germany. I'm not going to have my numbers here. 20,000 in one place. Cruelly tortured. Well, that's what God is counting out. And so Germany became the Western civilization. Germany became the fountainhead of doubt and atheism and skepticism, and still is. What was the effect on Luther? His popularity with the peasantry was destroyed. He was so popular before, after this, forget it. Luther lost much of his confidence in the common man. Why? That's the way they're going to act. And so more and more, the Lutheran movement became tied to the aristocracy. His movement became a thoroughgoing state church, but it worked at the top down. From state power, he was imposed. I mean, the Lutheran church became the What was the effect on Lutheranism? Lutheranism assumed the attitude that the task of the church is to procure individual interpersonal salvation, yet left to the state the task of building a Christian society which was good restraining. In fact, what they said was, it is the job, let me summarize for you, show how this is important for our day. It is said that the church took the position, because of what had happened, that the state has to take care of things like revolts and wars. What's the job of the church? Well, take care of people's personal salvation and stay out of state business. It's exactly what the humanists and the secularists want us to do today. People like us, it's unconstitutional to take your faith into the voting booth, we're being told. Since when? That's what we're being told. But you see, this is one of the reasons why Hitler could get away with it. We're going to come to this later again, but we see the roots way back here. We must see the connection. We must see the web, the historical web that's been woven. You see, one of the reasons why the church as a whole, not all of them, because there are many Christians who died for their faith. You hear about Hitler killing more Christians than he did Jews, you know? He killed 6 million Jews. He killed, actually, didn't kill 6 million. He killed about 4.5 million Jews. That number 6 million. I'm certain that makes any difference. Seven Christians. The Jews got all the rest of it. They didn't kill all the Christians.
hinder the church in all this?
Well, one of the things that hinder the church, the state church, the Lutheran church, the evangelical church, one of the things that kept it from getting involved in what Hitler had done and what Germany had done back in the days of the Kaiser, World War I, was that that from this time on, the Lutheran church developed a hands-off attitude toward the state. That is, Hitler could say to the church, you take care of people's salvation, I'll take care of politics. And they didn't all buy that, but because a significant number bought that, and that is among the leaders of the church, because that was a popular religion, as opposed to the Calvinists, which is just the opposite. Whereas Luther says the business of the state to run the state, the church takes care of salvation, he can know that business. The Calvinists, they had, and it's the job of the church to run the state. He's putting ahead. So the Luther was saying, did it make sense to you? So many Germans, what I'm saying is that because of their tradition, the German church was predisposed to a large part to standing by and letting the government do whatever it did.
Well,
his problem with the Christians was that he was establishing that the Germany was a cult. He was the head of that cult. Führer means the spirit of the leader, but the spiritual leader. He was setting up a state religion where God was identified with the Teutonic German spirit. You say God, you mean this Teutonic German spirit. And who was the culmination, who was the perfect representation of that Teutonic spirit? Him. So he was setting himself up as in a very genuine sense of the deity, function of the deity. And that is what he thought it was going to be, going to be him. And then, of course, the Christian church couldn't tolerate that. And they could not tolerate what he was doing. See, one thing that's often not said is that how many Germans gave them put their lives on the line, they lost their lives to save the Jews. And it's this Holländer, his name, went into Germany so many times with his name, and brought out so many Jews, but all by foot of my foot to save the pain of them. And then from the world of Russians, they were in prison. You see, the Russians have always had the same attitude toward the Jews. A lot of people don't realize, you see, that Russia changed sides. That Russia had, that when Germany invaded Poland, Russia invaded Poland. Russia was on the side of Hitler. They were together in the beginning. So,
are there still
followers
of Hitler in Germany?
And in America, especially in South.
And they look in here towards him and
not really, not in the full sense, no. In other words, one is worship. They're very humanistic, they're evolutionists. No God in the traditional Judeo-Christian sense, not that sense. But destiny or whatever, fortunes of evolutionary chance, however you want to think about it, the Teutonic people is the master race. That is, it's the idea that the white Nordics, the white Teutonics, are the natural masters. Well, this turn of the century anthropology, cultural anthropology study that is the idea that the Nordics, the white Teutonics, are the natural masters of the world. They're just intrinsically better at everything. And so the closer you come to God is this German spirit.
That's why Jesse Owens was really upset purely.
Yeah, when he made Rabbi Adam, this black man, who beat the Germans about everything. because he was supposed to be naturally inferior. Well, of course, this was the idea that helped sustain American slavery for a long time. For instance, that the idea that the black man was a natural slave, he was born to that. And he could not, if you try to take him out of that place, you're working.
A lot of people took it out of the misinterpretation of the scriptures.
Yes, it's a point. Yeah, I come to the error. I remember where the person came in. I'm on hand.
So you believe it on Cain and...
Not Cain, a medical curse.
And Cain also.
And, yes, true. Anyway, but
did that answer your question, Mark?
Yes, it's a quite complicated. Okay.
But does this help you understand German history? I think if you don't really understand German history, do you see this? This loss of faith and this separation, this idea that it is not the business of the church to tell Hitler or anybody else what they can or cannot do. Well, they said, we tried it once, and look what happened. See, when the church tried to interfere, you got the peasants' revolt, and we just don't want to do that again. Okay, we move on very quickly now. Luther continues to be under the gun by the Holy Roman Empire, Charles V, and by the Pope. They hadn't forgotten him. You know, he's been writing and writing music and writing catechism and organizing the state church up there in Saxony, helping organize it elsewhere, but he has not been forgotten. What's a diet?
Court.
It's a court, and spear is where they held it. And to deal with the problem of the Lutheran territories, that is, some territories in Germany, the Holy Roman Empire, and now, what I mean is here, some territories, over 300 states, some, everyone, they have one state church, for some of them it was a Catholic, but the majority of them, especially in the South, the state church was Roman Catholic, as it had always been. Or a minority, but this minority included some of the most powerful states like Saxony. And some of the electors, those who elected the emperor, were now included in these. Some of these had a Lutheran state church. And of course, the Pope didn't like that, Charles V. What was his nationality? Charles V of Spain, maybe I said one time. He ended up controlling all of this, even the Netherlands, Charles V, and the head of the Holy Roman Empire. He was the most powerful king. Keep in mind, he was trying to control the papacy, which is why the Pope couldn't offend the Germans. The Pope had to be very careful. Now, it was a new thing, look what I put in capital letters, for a country to experience religious pluralism. What is pluralism? More than one church, more than one religion. It occurred to a few, if any, in the Holy Roman Empire that society could survive with any arrangement other than one state and one church. But the only ones who were going to deny that were the Anabaptists. We're going to see both the Protestants and the Catholics kill them for the good of society, of course. Why? You've got to have one state and one church. It can't work.
Is that why they thought the U.S. was going to fail when the colonies first started?
Yes. It helps us understand what a bold enterprise was the American experiment. The idea that you could have... Not, you see, it's one thing to say one state, one church. We're going to come back to this several times. It's something else to say one state with many churches sharing power. It's one thing to say a state with no. You see, it's the opposite of Luther, what happened in Germany. Luther lost all confidence in the common man after the Luther shooting. So he said, we've got to have this one church from above. Our founding fathers have ultimate confidence in the common man. And they will not have a state church at all. Not a federal church. See, it's just the exact opposite. Now, Roman Catholic princes, as I've already said, were in the majority. They banded together to stop the spread of Lutheranism. But this thing was going to stop this. Because they threatened force, Charles V stepped in and called this diet. Why? Because if he didn't step in and settle this issue, they're going to have war. He didn't want war. He couldn't afford to fight a war. One thing, the Turks were pressing in. He had other interests in mind. Now, what simply brought this up, I put this parenthetical study, and this is very, very, very important. Let's learn this. I promise you it will be on an exam, whether it's on the essay question I hand out, whether I think you're right or whether I get the luck of the draw that you're right or not. You see, let's go over this. This is very important. In the world of the late Middle Ages, society or the state was conceived of as Christendom. This concept saw the state and the church functioning essentially as one. It was universally accepted as true that more than one religion in a state would divide the state, as it often did. In the Holy Roman Empire, after the beginning of Lutheranism, there were now two religions. Got that? Catholic and Lutheran. their immersion in the course of time, three possible, now this is looking, you understand why this is parenthetical in my syllabus? Because it looks ahead too. There are roles, you see, as long as there was only one church, which was the Roman Catholic Church, then nobody had a problem. But when, after the Lutheran Reformation began, and now you had a state church that was not Roman, then it raised the issue of, well, what about this assumption of one church, one state? And so there was worked out, or sort of came out in the natural course of things, three possible solutions. One, you know, in other words, it's okay to say one church, one state, but what happens when, number one, you have two churches or more, and number two, you can't get rid of that church. See, if you can do what the Roman Catholic princes wanted to do and simply eradicate it, then you solve your problem. You know, you got two churches, you get rid of one, you're back to one, no problem. One church, one state. You with me? So the problem really came when they realized, when these solutions began to be worked out, when they realized that no matter what they did, they were going to have more than one church. You understand that? When they saw that, then there arose the solution. I listed there for you. The first one is called territorialism. And that is, while, say, in the Holy Roman Empire, you would have these different cities, these different states, you know, some different states, you would have more than one church in the overall state, you would only have one church in a territory. That is, you might say Saxony would be, this is hypothetical Saxony, Saxony would be Lutheran, Brandenburg, or some other German state would be Catholic, and so, it just gets more complicated than that, but, and so, you follow me, you would either be Lutheran or Catholic, but not both. You would not have both a Catholic church and a Lutheran church in any one territory. So territorialism is, sort of divide up like a checkerboard, and you have, well, you still know this, in a sense, you still have one church, one state. But only, that is, now you have one church in the territorialism. And this was what was worked out in Germany and Switzerland. So broadly that you can include a lot of people. That is, you define the faith, the state faith. Right? You define the state faith so ambiguously or loosely or generously that people can have widely divergent beliefs and still be in the state church. Pardon? Kind
of like
what? Military. Yeah, that's a good example. Kind of like military. That's a good example. I never thought about that. That's right. For instance, often a base church, a church at a base, they will have religious services, but they keep it general. So the Baptists can go, Lutherans can go, and Presbyterians and Catholics, and I've held those services even on military bases. And so, and you're kind of, you can preach anything you want to, but the general practice is keep it general. Anyway, but there's a base church. I met the chaplain, and they obviously it didn't work perfectly in England, but this was the solution worked out in England. Got that? That is, number one, the first solution that comes out of this is territorialism. One church in one territory. Not two. Second, comprehension. One church, one state, but you can believe, you can be very, the state faith is general enough to comprehend a broad divergence of belief. That was the solution basically worked out in England. Now France didn't have the problem. Well, we're going to see, they killed all the Protestants. They still had, remember I said before, if you get rid of the Protestants, you only have one. That was sort of the solution in France was, kill the Protestants, and you only got one church left. They couldn't completely kill them, but that was their solution. And in Spain, kill the Protestants. The third solution is I put yourself.
That allowed the door for atheism to try to come in now because
it's in the city. Plus, atheism came in Germany and we had it. But it didn't stop. But the point is that you don't have a state church. Or if you do have a state church, it's not, you don't have to belong to it to hold public office and get married and go to university. Understand? Now, England did, we're going to see, they started out with comprehension as a theory and gradually kind of bled into religious liberty. So in England today, you do not suffer civil disabilities. You don't. Does England have a state church? Yes. Do you suffer civil disabilities if you don't belong to it? No. One time you did. But it's only, by the way, it's only until this century that you didn't. The Great Reform Movement in the late 19th century. Until this century, even into this century, if you were not a member of the state church in England, you suffered civil disability. By that, by civil disability, we're looking ahead. But when this, we're going to see it after Elizabeth's time, for instance, James, they wouldn't put you to death if you didn't belong to the state church. But you couldn't go to the university, you couldn't go to Oxford, Cambridge, one, those belong to the church. You couldn't get your kids baptized. And you couldn't get married, because who marries you? The church. You couldn't get buried because all the cemeteries were church cemeteries. They controlled that. You couldn't hold public office. You couldn't vote. So it's pretty rough, yes.
Is there a church,
the
state church?
No, it's Anglican. They have a local Catholic church, not the state church. It's our state church. Now, did y'all see this? So, if you only have one state, one church in the state, you got no problem. If you assume there has to be this one state, one church, once you have more than one, you either eradicate one, like Spain and France, or you can't get rid of them, like they couldn't in Germany, it's your tribe. You have territorialism, or comprehension, or religious liberty. It's very important you understand that. If you understand that, that's what's going on. That you help you understand that the history of this period. Question? Yes.
One thing you end up with religious liberty, but how do you end up controlling when the liberty starts affecting other people's liberty starts affecting you, such as like the atheists, right? They're starting to control our school system.
Yes.
And even get
which
into
is unconstitutional. Which all you can do is appeal to the law.
But they say it's not unconstitutional.
Yes. Well, the problem Christian has, people like you and me have, is that our only recourse is to the courts. And if the courts, as the Supreme Court has done, place games with the Constitution, then we have no recourse. But don't let that bother you, Bob. In the nature of Christianity, Christians belong in jail anyway. In the long view.
Just bothers me that wasn't what the country was founded for.
You understand what I'm saying? Yeah. I don't mean in jail, literally, although sometimes that's the case. But Christians, I'm going to put it this way, look at the long view. See, the American freedom is a beautiful experience, 200 years old. It's unique. Historically, it's like a blurb in history. written the history of the church in 2032. And the church, oh, here's my statement. This is theology and history married. I teach both. So whether I'm right or wrong, this is what I say. That the church being what it is, the gospel being what it is, the world being what it is, things being what they are, in the long view,
Sunday afternoon tea and crochet party.
what do you think, you know, join the army, learn how to shoot during a war, and you get sent to the lines, and that's when you get shot at. You got no right to be surprised, understand? You might get killed, and you might get mad, you understand? But you don't act like
I just thought I expected. After now, I believe in the living.